Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything, from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
On this week's show, we're going to get into this new technology you're probably hearing a lot about, which is 5G. Now, of course, when we talk about development of mobile cellular services, we're talking about generations of particular type of wireless transmission capabilities, that power our cell phones and devices in daily life that work over radio rather than over a physical line, such as those we used to have with our landlines at home and, in the old days when you had to have a cord connected to the wall. So this week we've invited Verizon to the show to help us with understanding the intricacies of this new technology. And we're very pleased to have on the show Serhad Doğan. I hope I got that pronunciation right, Serhad. He drives emerging technology innovation within the Verizon 5G ecosystem team. He works with their clients around the world, including their new incubator and research labs, which we're going to talk about in the second half of the show, and their venture capital team. But he looks at these innovation labs in New York City, Palo Alto, in California, in Cambridge, Massachusetts, in Washington, D.C., to really sort of test these new 5G solutions. So he seems to be in a really good position to talk to us about what 5G is and how it's going to change the world. He held similar innovation roles with InterDigital, Qualcomm, and Cisco in the past. He's got a computer engineering degree. He holds 7 U.S. and 11 worldwide patents, and he's based in Verizon's headquarters in New Jersey. So, Serhad, welcome to Breaking Banks.
Thank you very much, Brett. Really happy to be here today. Long-time listener of the show. And
now you're on the show. Yeah,
now I'm the show. That's great. Let me take a step back and give the listeners a perspective on 5G. I know people have been hearing about it a lot, and then for a regular person, they may think, "Well, we go from 4G to 5G. It's going to be 25% better, right?" So it's actually not the case. So let me give some. Peel the onion and give some background about what the technology is. As you may know, the wireless generation, the technology comes along almost like once in 10 years, transition from 2G to 3G to 3G to 4G. That kind of followed that cycle.
Yeah, that makes sense, because it was 1980 was sort of the first generation of cell phones. In the 90s, we had 2G. You're right; it is every 10 years. I hadn't sort of connected that.
Yeah, absolutely. And in 5G, actually, it's really not 4G plus one. I call it both a revolution and an evolution. It's a evolution in a sense that LTE 4G is not going anywhere. It's going to be with us for some time, but 5G brings significant improvements on top of 4G. We kind of call them 8 currencies of 5G. Let me give you a rundown on what those are.
Please.
I guess the most important or the most widely known is the increase in speed. And theoretically, we're talking about 10 gigabytes per second. But let me just say conservatively about a gigabyte per second. And that's like fiber-like speed over the air without the fiber. And what I'm actually seeing in the lab is anywhere from 4 to 6 gigabit per second. Another benefit or currency, as we call it, that 5G brings is the latency. And that is a significant improvement on top of LTE. Over the air, theoretically, we're talking about a millisecond latency. But let's say conservatively about 10 milliseconds. Why is that important? Because there are a lot of applications out there that needs that very low latency. Obviously, from financial services, a lot of people are going to be able to associate with that. A third currency I want to introduce is the data volume that 5G can support. even though the advances on the radio side covers the transmission over the airwaves, the underlying enabler for 5G is the backhaul, and that is all fiber, and that is very important. 5G is going to be able to support 10 terabytes per second per square kilometer. So that's a huge, significant improvement over LTE, because otherwise it doesn't make sense to have a very fast network in terms of bandwidth on the radio side, but not being able to support it in the backhaul. And that's thanks to the fiber infrastructure, and Verizon has made significant improvements upgrading the backhaul to fiber. I think we're in the process of buying millions of miles of fiber.
Wow. So this is key, because you can't just stick these incredibly powerful towers around the place that can transmit in 5G if the connection between the towers to the backbone of the internet is based on, you know, slow pipes, right?
Yeah. You just cannot use copper. So it is a major upgrade in the backhaul as well. So what that means is the technology is bit per hertz per second, much more efficient compared to LTE. And if I were to put that into layman's terms, the amount of information that you can squeeze into the airway during that a second or the time frame is much more efficient compared to LTE. And that's how we are able to support these sort of huge improvements in terms of the data volume that can be transmitted.
Now, one of the things that was sort of made possible cell towers in the old days in terms of this revolution was this sort of, I don't know if you call it a technology or a protocol, but this spread spectrum messaging architecture, the ability to take a packet of data and split it into multiple pieces of data, send that simultaneously and reassemble that at the other end. And this was initially developed for encryption of messages in the military, but was a way to enable us to send massive amount of data rather than having to wait for an entire audio packet to be sent at one time. Does 5G still sort of use that core basic technology?
Yes, that's why I mentioned it's also evolution. I mean, the underlying advances that were done in other Gs are not going away. That's why, from that perspective, it's building on top of what we already had before. And I believe an actress invented or came up with that original idea.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, it was... Oh, yeah. I can't bring her name back yet. I'll have to research that. But yeah, she was an actress in Hollywood. Yeah, very true. Now, it uses a different type of radio frequency, doesn't it, 5G?
Yes, it does. And we call it 5G New Radio. From a standardization perspective, 3GPP is the global standards organization that sets the standards. So the Release 15, we call it New Radio. And let me give you a perspective of what's going on there. You're absolutely right. It's using a different spectrum. So you can actually use a very high-end spectrum, 28 gigahertz or 39 gigahertz. And that's what we are using at Verizon. And the service we launched earlier in 2018 is taking advantage of the 28 gigahertz spectrum. I expect that... we will be using a dynamic spectrum management technology that you can actually aggregate spectrum from the high-end, mid-band, and low-end. That's what the technology enables. And this is going to be a very dense deployment, because a lot of the gains are going to be thanks to the cell size getting smaller, smaller, and smaller.
So is this mean the... cell towers are smaller, the area, the antennas are smaller? What do you mean by cells being smaller?
Yeah, definitely. I think the concept of a cell tower, the way as we know it from the macro base station architecture, is also evolving. Now, the concept of a tower or the radio is a bit different, that it actually gets very small. And actually, if you ever visit our 5G lab in New York, I can show you the radio. It's almost like a small box. And you can even see the evolution of that box from last year to this year. It actually got smaller. So you can think of it as a small box that can be attached to a utility pole, light pole, street furniture. And even though it is small, what's happening under the hood is a very complex technology. We had the multiple input, multiple output technology in LTE, in 4G. Now we're taking that into a massive MIMO in 5G. What that means is the number of antennas within that radio, the base station, is actually increasing. And there's a huge amount of complexity to be able to form beams, steer those beams. And even though the size looks smaller, there's a huge advancement what's going on in that box.
That makes sense. I mean, Moore's Law is being applied to everything. So we should be miniaturizing radio equipment or making it smaller, obviously. So these huge towers we used to see on the 15 driving out to Connecticut and things like that, you know, we now got these things can fit on the top of a building or a light pole. It's pretty incredible shift in that tech. Now, there is some... discussion, as there always is with these new technologies, about whether 5G is safe. And I don't know if you want to get into this, but you know, the in terms of the type of non-ionizing radiation and so forth that comes off this, can you sort of put people's minds at ease in terms of the safety around the 5G technology?
Yeah, so there has been a lot of research done around that area. By the vendors. I don't want to comment too much more, on that, but I believe there's a study on the FCC website that people can look up and refer to. I haven't really heard anyone talking about a significant issue. All equipment used for 5G must comply with the federal safety standards, and they, I believe, have wide safety margins and designed to protect everyone, including children.
Yeah, they do. So there's a bunch of guidelines. If you guys are interested in this, there's a bunch of research that's been done on this. I'll give you the highlights. So the FCC has a safe limit. They call it SAR, or specific absorption rate of a wattage of radiation, any type of radiation or radio wavelengths that can... produce heat. So if you think about the way a microwave works, it uses thousands of watts of power, but takes those microwave beams and heats up your food. So at very, very low power, a radio wave or a beam can produce a similar effect. But obviously, it's often imperceptible. It's often lower, obviously, than even the radiation we get from the sun. But the short-term message is that, a UV tanning booth, for example, is thousands of times more dangerous than the type of LTE or Wi-Fi or 5G signals that you're likely to be exposed to from these towers around the city. So that's the short term. There's a bunch of medical research on it and so forth. If you see these headlines around, cell towers going to give you cancer and MM wave technology leading to brain tumors, things like that, the reality is the data just doesn't show that. And this is... you're getting exposure to less radiation than you do from the sun on a sunny day in the summer from this stuff. So,
That's right. I mean, the RF frequency energy from 5G small cells, we believe will be well within those safety limits that you talked about. And then it's going to be comparable to the exposure from other products operating in maybe similar frequencies, like baby monitors, Wi-Fi routers, Bluetooth devices. And you probably know Wi-Fi 11AD is also operating in the 60 gigahertz range, and that has been around for a couple of years. So that's also within the safety limits. But I have a UV tanning appointment this afternoon, so thanks for that background info.
There you go. So just don't use 5G and the UV tanner at the same time, dude.
Okay.
Now, so you talked about the fiber rollout and so forth, but let's talk about Verizon's rollout. Obviously, you guys are spending a huge amount of money on this, rolling out this tech. So let's talk about that timeline, you know, and talk about what is involved in Verizon switching to 5G. It sounds like, you know, we're talking about new types of cell towers, we're talking about fiber backbone. It sounds like a massive undertaking.
Yes, yes. Let me talk about what we have already done. In 2018, we actually launched our first commercial product for the consumers, and that's our fixed wireless access deployment that is using the 28 gigahertz. So that product is offering a fiber-like speed for the residences without the cable. So the last mile home delivery is all 5G. So that was deployed in four cities, Los Angeles, Indianapolis, Houston, and Sacramento. And last week, our CEO announced 30 cities that we will be also deploying 5G in 2019. And also last week, we announced, and even like this week, we announced other handset OEM partners that will be launching 5G handsets. And I expect the deployment will accelerate from this point on with mobility and also other very exciting components of 5G, which are mobile edge computing and network slicing as well.
Very interesting. Now, I want to talk about your incubator labs in the second half of the show, but let's talk about some of the uses of 5G day-to-day. Obviously, one of the big trends is we're starting to talk about smart everything, smart homes, you know, smart autonomous vehicles and so forth. So why is it that as we introduce all of these new connected devices, why is it that we need 5G?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned IoT. I mean, IoT is not new. It was around during the LTE timeframe. But what 5G is doing is another currency I actually didn't talk about is the density of connected devices that it can support. So it is able to support a million sensors in a square kilometer area. Couple of weeks ago when I checked how many connected just phones, tablets, TVs, or gaming consoles I had at home, it was somewhere between 10 and 20. So think about within the next 5 years, how many wearables we're going to have just from a consumer perspective.
Right.
And also think about a city like Manhattan or Hong Kong where you have a very dense population and being able to support that many connected devices is significant because we're going to get to that. As well as these connected devices, it could be just a simple sensor, which is sleeping most of the time, sending a little bit amount of data, and then going to sleep again. So a very frequent sleep-wake-up cycle. So that actually puts a lot of signaling effort to the network, and 5G is going to be able to support that much density. And also, it is very energy efficient as well compared to the current consumption. The KPI there is about 10% of the current consumption.
So, Serhad, in order to understand why 5G is a critical piece of technology for autonomous vehicles, I managed to catch up with Robert Scoble during the week. He is at a spatial computing startup called Infinite Retina, and this is what he had to say about why we need 5G in autonomous vehicles. We're welcoming back to the show Robert Scoble. He's the Chief Strategy Officer for Infinite Retina, a new spatial computing startup. We're going to talk about that a bit later in a later show. But Robert, just before we started chatting on the air, you have, of course, completed a fairly significant in real-life test of the Model 3 Tesla. You did a 9,000-mile road trip, if I'm not mistaken.
I did, with my kids. It was fun.
How many states did you do on that trip?
20-something states, 22 states, something like that. It was pretty crazy. Took a month.
Yeah, month on the road with the. So you've got some great experience with the autopilot. You have said on your Facebook live feeds and so forth about your level of comfort and stress that is reduced as a result of the autopilot. Of course, we're hearing talk about more automation coming. But my question for you is, how do you think 5G will affect the autonomous vehicle ecosystem?
Pretty deeply. I mean, if you look at what doesn't work today on autopilot, even on a freeway, it doesn't see potholes and it doesn't see things like ladders falling off, you know, objects falling off of trucks in front of you that you have to react to. It just isn't good enough at seeing those. That's actually why I leave Waze running while I'm using autopilot, because people in front of me report that they've seen something like an object in the road or a new pothole, and that warns me, and then I can start looking for it and drive around it. In the future, though, that will be imaged by either a LiDAR or a camera in a car in front of us, and that'll be relayed back to my car through 5G, in part because of the low latency, the amount of antennas that can be hooked up to each other, right, goes way up on 5G, and because of the high bandwidth. I heard Cisco CEO last night saying that it's up to 100 times faster than LTE.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So think of a car that's driving in front of you that's imaging the road in 3D and sending that map back to you and saying, hey, and all the AI that's going to go on in between there, right? Because the car's doing AI, trying to figure out where objects are, where pedestrians are, where motorcyclists are, where other cars, where potholes are, sends that data to the cloud, and more analysis happens on the cloud, and then sends it backward to my car, and my car goes, oh, there's a new pothole up ahead, we better change lanes, right?
So one of the critical things here is like this 3D point mapping, which is going to be the sort of this 3D representation of the world that's critical. Yeah. What you're suggesting is that actually these maps aren't static, you know, like a Google map or a, you know, an Apple Maps, which changes fairly infrequently. Yes. 3D point maps of the world are going to have to be updated constantly.
Constantly. I just did a video with the head of AR at Niantic, which is a gaming company. But he's building a new platform to keep track of some of this data on top of the world. We call these AR clouds in the business, by the way. And these AR clouds are going to be sharing this kind of data with other systems. I think that you hit it, the 3D sensor system. We used to call it SLAM map. Now the term is switching to AR cloud. It's really going to throw a lot of data up in the cloud and amongst mesh networks on the street. And 5G is perfect for that. It's a real key enabler, I see.
So tell me, just before we finish up here, how's the experience with the autopilot changed in recent times?
It's upgrading every 2 to 3 weeks, and since I got my car last April, the car is more confident, smoother, sees through rain better, and has a whole lot of new features that didn't exist less than a year ago. Like it takes off ramps now automatically, it does merging much better. It's still far, far from perfect, but when you start looking at the rate of change, you can say, okay, 5 years from now, we're going to be driving a lot on autonomously.
Yeah, great. Well, Robert Scoble, thanks for joining us on the show and giving us your thoughts on the autonomous driving.
Thanks for having me on.
Okay, so Howard, we see autonomous vehicles as one application of that. What are some of the other things where 5G is really going to enable us in terms of IoT, where it's going to be important? What about sort of the initiatives we just saw FedEx announce their robot delivery service, their same day robot delivery service? Google acquired Dispatch, the robot company, with the small delivery robots. Are they going to be on 5G?
Yeah, for any precision equipment that requires low latency, we see them being enabled with 5G. And 5G is going to be critical to actually maybe not have a demo or two, but actually to scale that service to hundreds or thousands or millions of devices. Definitely drone delivery, robotics, or autonomous vehicle technology are going to be very heavy users of 5G. For instance, an autonomous vehicle, which is actually a robot, a computer driving a vehicle, requires high-definition 3D maps for that computer to be able to drive it accurately. Without the map, the computer cannot drive the car.
Right, and so those maps or that awareness may actually be transmitted rather than downloaded and in the memory of these devices, right?
Exactly. That numbers that I heard from AV companies, autonomous vehicle technology companies, were anywhere from 1 petabyte to 15 petabytes of data in an hour.
So, you know, I mean, just launching autonomous vehicles could take all the 4G bandwidth in the US if they were to come onto the network without 5G.
Yeah, that seems to be the case. Having a deployment with one or two vehicles, yeah, you can do that on LTE, but scaling that service up with hundreds of thousands of vehicles, that's definitely going to suck up all the bandwidth that's available on LTE networks.
Absolutely. All right, great. So I want to come back to the incubator labs after the break, but you know, in terms of the organizations working on some of the tech, what are the types of organizations that Verizon finds itself working with on prototyping this 5G technology?
Yeah, I'm glad you touched on the 5G labs. That is the place that we explore and build a 5G-powered future. And we are collaborating with the innovators from enterprises, our clients, startups, accelerators, other incubators, academia. And our work there is getting our hands dirty to actually bring in these partners, validate or invalidate the technology, onboard them on 5G, and then collect KPIs and collect learnings about what worked, what didn't work. So it's an area for us to assess new technologies, emerging technologies with external partners. We have events there, showcase events. Actually, we had a
meeting. Okay, so let's do this. Let's take a quick break, and then let's come back to the incubator labs, talk a little bit more about what's happening there, and maybe hopefully we can talk to a couple of the players at the incubator labs and see what they're working on.
Sounds good.
Okay, guys, you're listening to Breaking Banks, the number one global fintech radio show and podcast in the world. So thanks for joining us. We're just going to have a quick break, and we'll be right back talking more about how 5G is going to change your world.
Always talking business. Talk to an expert. Call now toll free 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
You're listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks, the number one global fintech radio show and podcast. This week, we are talking fifth generation mobile technology, the 5G, which is going to enable us to do all sorts of amazing things on our smartphone. We are gratefully joined by Serhad Dolkin, who is the leading expert at Verizon on this technology and its application in the fintech space, which we'll get to in a little while. He drives the Verizon 5G ecosystem team and is responsible for their incubator or innovation labs, 5G labs around the country, which we'll get to in a moment. But Serhad, just before the break, as we were talking about the application of 5G technologies, one of the requirements for all of this IoT operation and so forth is this sort of next generation computing paradigm, taking us from cloud to what's known as edge computing. So can you explain edge computing a little bit to our audience?
Yes, it's my pleasure. So we should think about the 5G networks, not only communication networks, but also computing inherently built into them. So just like we had public cloud services that can be accessed to our mobile devices or laptops, within the 5G era, what we will have is a mobile edge computing layer built into the operator network. And what that is useful for is, say, a very compute-intensive job, whether that's an augmented reality application, virtual reality application, or autonomous vehicle, very granular computation that is mission critical. Those kind of computations can be actually offloaded at the edge of the network rather than taking all that info back to a public cloud or trying to accomplish all that computation within the device itself.
So we sort of have this distributed cloud ecosystem.
Yes, you got it, definitely.
It sounds a lot like sort of the blockchain paradigm, but for computing resources.
In a way, it does. It is mini cloudlets.
That's what you call them, cloudlets? Cloudlets, I like that.
That's one terminology. That
microclouds.
Yes. Yeah, microclouds, yes. Yes, since the latency is so low with the 5G network, so you can actually offload that computation to the edge and then get the results really, really fast.
And so this is actually quite critical for things like AI agency or autonomy, where you require some data resources for the AI to be able to do their job. For example, Siri, when you use Siri or Amazon Echo technology, it has to go to the cloud to crunch the voice recognition stuff. It doesn't have all that built into the chip or on the handset. But you know, what you're saying is some of that resource capability may be in a distributed basis, so it's very low latency access time to that core functionality, rather than having to go to a central cloud system.
Exactly, and the example that you started with is the perfect example. We're seeing increased usage of digital assistants or virtual agents within the financial services market, and they are, as I see them, would be layers that would be sitting on top of a mobile edge computing platform. So think of it as a curated technology stack. At the bottom, you have 5G. On top of that, you have mobile edge computing. And the AI, natural language processing, computer vision would be layers that would sit on top of that edge computing infrastructure. So that would accelerate the performance of those digital assistants. And the conversation would be contextual, and it would be fluid. Just you and I are talking today.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, whatever happened to sort of wideband Wi-Fi that was supposed to sort of do this this job in the past? We talked about that and sort of the mesh networking stuff.
So Wi-Fi innovation roadmap is also advancing.
Remember, it's called WiMAX or something, right?
Oh, you're talking about WiMAX. Okay, WiMAX was 802.16. It was its peak, I think, around between 2006 and 2010, but it kind of flickered off, and it wasn't really. It was a competitor to LTE at the time, but the global support behind LTE was much more than WiMAX. So, sort of LTE won that race.
Yeah. All right. Well, but of course, I think, you know, the mesh networking stuff, again, that's another angle. But 5G could be a real enabler for that, couldn't it?
Yes, yes. It for any new AI layers on top of Mac, definitely 5G is going to be an enabler for that.
Great. So let's get to talking about the labs themselves that you guys are developing, trying to incubate some of these 5G ideas. Tell me about where you have your innovation labs or your incubator spaces.
So they're all around across the country. We have five locations. The first one we opened up was in New York City. It is in the Chelsea area. We have another one in Palo Alto. The other one we have on the West Coast is in LA, Playa Vista area. And then we have two more on the East Coast. One is in DC and one is in Cambridge.
Sorry, I was just checking. You know, the New Yorkers still call Chelsea the meatpacking district. You know that, right?
Yeah.
Because that's what it used to be called from the days ago when they actually literally packed meat there. But who have you invited into these innovation labs around the country? You know, what sort of startups are you talking to?
So we are going through a curated process of filtering any emerging technology that could be a value add-on on top of 5G or can take advantage of the capabilities offered by 5G as a candidate. Then we invite them. Do in-kind engineering support to onboard them, validate their technology, also validate ours on the radio and the network stuff, and then see how 5G is impacting these new use cases, and then collect KPIs about what the performance is, what can be done on 5G versus not on LTE or Wi-Fi. So a lot of emerging or mature startups, it's both ends of the spectrum.
Now, Sahad, you guys must be pretty serious about this because you've actually offered $1 million in seed money as a $1 million, I'm trying to find out what you guys call this, but to someone who wins sort of the most innovative technology approach built on 5G. Has this sort of come about quite recently, right?
Yes, this is something that our CEO announced at CES. It is called 5G Million Dollar Challenge. I think folks can find it easily if they did a quick Google search. And this is the objective of this is rather than just us thinking about what would be the next set of killer applications, let's reach out to the entrepreneurial community and then let them come in and propose their ideas, work with us, and then bring them to fruition. I would love to have a lot of your listeners, folks from the fintech community to apply and work with us and then win that $1 million.
Absolutely. Well, that sounds exciting. You know, for most startups, $1 million, a pretty big seed round, you know, it's a pretty serious investment. So great to see Verizon investing in startups who will deploy this technology. I'm interested to see also the CEO talked about the fourth industrial revolution and that sort of concept. I think that really must be part of the culture at Verizon these days, that you guys are part of the architecture of this fourth industrial revolution, yeah?
Yeah, definitely. We believe that we need the ecosystem to help us to build these new set of applications. And in addition to the cash infusion or the prize, what we're offering to the startups is also access to a 5G network, which is not readily available, but also the engineering help to onboard them and do debugging and then help them to realize the benefits of 5G, sort of rather than them building around us, the idea is to build with them together.
So we thought we'd reach out to one of the participants in the Verizon Labs, 5G Labs initiative, and speak to them about how 5G is going to impact their business. So we're very fortunate to have, from the team of Second Mind, you can check them out at secondmind.ai, the founder and CEO, Kul Singh. So Kul, welcome to Breaking Banks.
Thank you for the opportunity.
So tell me a bit more about, for those that aren't familiar with your product, let's talk about the form of AI that you guys have been building. It's based on conversational capabilities, but tell us about how the technology works.
Sure. So we are building an ambient voice AI product where we merge that into the telephony stack, so to help business work smarter and be more secure. And what we're doing is that we're integrating that within the telcos and other telephony vendors, regardless if it's 4G, voice over IP, or 5G, where it's just turnkey. And our view is that telephony-based voice AI will be a significant market, the less friction there is for organizations to access those capabilities.
Really, really cool. So I watched the video of your tech. So it sort of sits, there's been a lot of debate, of course, around ambient voice stuff with Facebook ads and things like that. I'm sure you've heard the conspiracy theories around that these technologies sort of listening into us. But why is sort of low latency edge computing, the stuff that Sarah's been talking about in respect to Verizon's platform, why is that tech so important for something like conversational based AI?
Okay, I actually would like to address the first point, question, or comment you made, and then I'll
definitely... sure.
So we do take privacy as very critical, and we take that we think that's extremely important, obviously. So actually, our technology does not use recordings at all. It does not require any recordings. And of course, if an enterprise wants recordings, that's their option, but the default is no recordings, and we just process the information and look for where we can find insights we can add. That's very different than the 99% of the voice AI technologies out there that are constantly recording your audio and using that data for future reference. In terms of your question around 5G, so we're having a conversation right now, and that's a key difference versus something like Alexa or Google Home, which obviously we're seeing a lot of traction with, where you're speaking to a machine. But when we're having this conversation, you ask me a question, I can't wait for a system to have any delay. It has to be real time. And right. We're thinking about it's not just for phone calls.
That's how conversations in the real world work.
Right. When you're speaking in real time, if someone asks you for an answer and you're like pausing in an awkward way.
It's sort of weird, yeah.
Exactly. So it has to be very natural. It has to be very comfortable. So what 5G does, it allows us to bring down the latency, and that's for any device. It's for, as I said, if you're using smart glasses eventually, and that should be coming sooner than later, especially within the enterprise, phone calls, across the board, it allows you to achieve extremely low latency. And then also, we push documents, we can push a video. So if you need to see, open up a document while you're speaking to a client, you don't want to have it, be looking for that information. You want it to be pulling up right away where you can give that person an answer immediately.
Absolutely. So tell me about the work you've been doing with Verizon in the labs.
So they've been great as a partner and collaboration. They've connected us with a number of different types of customers in the banking world, retail, and other industries, where it helps us to understand the customer needs more. It's sort of an opportunity for them to explain sort of what they're looking to achieve, and also for us to be able to tell them how different applications can work within 5G that can help their business, which they're always looking to understand the next generation of telephony and the technology.
Thanks for joining us on the show today.
Great. Thank you. And I'll also give you my email. My email is kul@secondmind.ai. It's kul@secondmind.ai.
Yeah, we'll tweet out something about Second Mind as well. So thanks again.
Thank you.
Now, Sarhad, of course, this is a fintech show, so let's get to the meat of it. When we start talking about the application of 5G technologies into the banking, payments, and fintech space, you know, how do you see 5G application specifically in that area? What are you guys seeing working, you know, coming out of the labs? You know, where do you see the real need for low latency transactions or capabilities built on 5G?
Sure. So I would take the question and perhaps like split it into three sets. Because when you think about banks or financial services industry, I see one step is the bank engaging with the customer, whether that's on the digital medium or the retail branch. The second one is the bank's back-end operations. And the third one is maybe the interface between financial institutions themselves or other fintech companies. So I see an impact of 5G on all of those three. Let me start with the first one, the engagement with the customer, say, at the retail branch. At the first part of the show, we talked about IoT sensors.
You think they're still going to have branches after the fourth industrial revolution?
Well, I mean, we can debate that.
Everyone knows my sense of humor in respect to this on the radio show. You know, my second book was called Branch Today, Gone Tomorrow. So that tells you how I feel about it. But now go ahead. Sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah, I mean, definitely the branch today is going to look very different than today. It is very different than what it was during the 3G days, right? We had the flip phones. We would take our check, go to the bank, deposit, etc. Now it's all on an app on the mobile phone. Going forward, I mean, so you talked about soul machines. That's a great example. The chatbots I see in the future go from just being text-based into video-based. And it's not only a cold voice talking to you, but the emotion built into it. And that's why Soul Machines has been a very interesting partner for us. So assuming that there will be still a retail branch, we expect that a lot of video analytics used in the branch. That's more from a perspective of if there is a teller, like what is the queue in front of the teller, if there is one. More understanding the foot traffic within the branch, and also between branch to branch, I expect that 5G is going to enable a lot of video communications, because I feel that with 5G, all the communications we have will be based on video. Video will be everywhere. All applications, all conversations, yeah. All rooms will always be mobile and will be video based.
I really hadn't thought about it like that until we spoke to Soul Machines, but you know, that if you start thinking about the emotional component that you're discussing there, in a normal conversation you're having with an individual, they'll respond to you emotionally in real time. So you're going to need a heap of video going back and forth each way. It sort of makes sense, right? That 5G needs to underpin this sort of AI agent concept.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, think about it. How would you feel as a customer if the CEO or the avatar of the CEO would read you your monthly bank statement? How would you feel as a customer with your relationship with the bank or your portfolio? And those are the things that I think we go from the regular chatbot or digital assistants into a more multimodal, immersive virtual assistant world.
What about identity? You know, we saw in China in November with the massive Singles Day that Jack Ma launched, you know, on Alibaba. It sort of competes with Cyber Monday and Black Friday here. 31 billion in sales on that day. But we saw more than half of those transactions were done using biometric authentication, facial recognition being the primary mechanism that's sort of taking off in China right now. So how does 5G help us solve those problems of identity, so that we can ensure that identities can't be stolen anymore because a social security number can be easily, you know, engineered or taken from a customer versus, you know, actual behavior, actual biometrics?
Yeah, I think we move from a basic two-factor authentication world into, in the 5G world, we'll have multiple devices, multiple variables, as if you will, that we will be carrying with us. So I expect that the identity through those variables are going to be aggregated, and all the authorization authentication would have to be carried out at the edge of the network to make sure that everything is in sync and coordinated. So I don't expect that there's going to be a single method of doing identity, just facial recognition. I think it'll be a combination of that. Plus, it is tied to your behavioral patterns about how you serve, what's the data that you have already generated through the data exhaust systems. So that is a massive amount of data that needs to be analyzed and then processed through a 5G network. I mean, I can even see within a branch, somebody's trying to execute a transaction, and the branch would have to know where is this transaction in compliance, and in order to know that, they would have to have access to each computing resources to make sure that that is a authentic transaction. It's not a synthetic identity, and 5G will help reducing the fraud that may happen.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, we've had this discussion with regulators before, but, you know, that actually someone coming to a branch and presenting a driver's license has a higher chance of being a synthetic identity these days than, you know, signing up digitally with all of the KYC that we can do. But here's a question from left field that I just thought of. Does quantum computing play into this at all with 5G?
Quantum computing is a very interesting paradigm. Obviously, it's not for today, and you and I can argue whether it's 5 years from now based on the Gartner report that we probably both read, or maybe it's 10 years from now. But quantum computing, I see, is going to be a layer that's sitting on top of 5G, just like mobile edge computing. And it's going to help us to figure out the answers to very tough questions. That's going to need very heavy computation, a lot of permutational combinatorial analytics. I expect that that's going to, the first place that we're going to see that is going to be at the trading. And that's where 5G is going to have also significant impact, because those guys are using a lot, massive amount of data. Some of it is alternate data to make decisions. And I would expect that they're going to be the first users of quantum computing. And you have to marry up the computing with communication. So the significant impact will be the synergy between 5G and quantum computing.
Okay, so you know, we're running out of time, but I want to get down to two final questions for you. The first is, you know, in the labs that you've got, tell me about what Verizon provides for startups and how startups work with you in the labs day to day.
So startups either reach out to us, or I have a team that actually scours the earth, like finding soul missions in New Zealand is a good example. If we find these entrepreneurs, we reach out to them. We have a technical due diligence call with them. And then once we feel that there's a mutual interest and benefit to both of us, we schedule them, we bring them in, we test them. And one of the benefits is obviously once we complete that POC, proof of concept and MVP, the opportunity to be able to scale that up as a potential Verizon product or service and engage with our product teams to be able to use the large sales and marketing channels we have.
Yeah, so they get sort of a ready-made distribution platform in some respects as well, potentially.
Yes.
That's great. So just to finish up, you know, particularly for our listeners on the New York AM, you know, the tri-state area and on the AM band in the US who may not be as familiar with this stuff, maybe just give us a snapshot of a day in the life of a Verizon customer and how they'll use 5G.
So the customer can be a consumer or an enterprise. So for enterprises, since we talked about industrial revolution, we feel 5G is going to enable a real-time enterprise, which is an end-to-end from manufacturing all the way to distribution to supply chain to eventual sale and engagement with the customer. That's what we see as the major use case for the customers in the enterprise domain. Obviously, they're going to differ somewhat whether they're in manufacturing or healthcare or transportation or retail. But overall, that's our value offering, the real-time enterprise, everything being just in time. For the consumers, I expect that the consumers are going to go beyond the smartphone world. We will be moving from touchscreen into a vision world. We get to see information augmented into the real world. We don't have the devices yet, but we probably...
You're talking about like smart glasses with...
Smart glasses, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. More video, more immersive content. That's what's in for the consumers.
Very interesting. For a guy like me who loves sort of the tech and the sci-fi stuff, it's an exciting time. Well, Sirhad, thank you very... Oh, one final question. When do you think Verizon will start offering 5G handsets?
We actually announced last week the availability. So for consumers to order that, I think it's going to be pretty soon this spring.
Great. Wow. Well, look, thank you for coming on the show today. We really appreciate it. Where can people find out more information about the labs?
Folks can reach out to me. I'll provide them my email. It's actually my first name dot last name at Verizon.com. First name Sirhad, last name Doken. If you just Google me,
we'll put it in the show description, and we'll tweet out some links as well to the particular sites and stuff where people can get access to it. So, thanks again for joining the show, and thanks for telling us all about 5G technology. Very exciting times.
It's been fun. Thank you very much, Brett.
So that is the show for this week. My thanks to Verizon, our sponsor for the show today, talking about 5G tech and where it's going to take us. And don't forget, if you are a fan of Breaking Banks, if you like what you hear, don't forget to go to iTunes or Stitcher or wherever it is that you get the goodness of Breaking Banks and give us a 5-star review, recommend us to your friends, tweet us out on Twitter, put us on LinkedIn, just help us get the word out, because that's how we roll. Thanks again for joining us on Breaking Banks. I'll be with you again next week, either myself or JP Nichols or Jason Hendricks, our regular hosts. And thanks again.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, for more of the latest in fintech news.